Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On WNYC. Now we continue our series, 51 Council Members in 52 Weeks, as we touch every neighborhood of New York City in this year when City Council is mostly new members and majority female for the first time ever. This is week 13 of this year of 2022, and we are up to District 13 in the East Bronx, including the areas on the Bronx side of the Whitestone and Throgs Neck Bridges, and then up through neighborhoods including Morris Park, Pelham Parkway, City Island, Van Ness, and others, and up to the Westchester Line around where I-95 starts to head toward New England. The new council member, Marjorie Velasquez, grew up in the area. Her parents came from Puerto Rico in the 70s. She earned a finance and accounting degree at NYU, became the Municipal Services Committee Chair of Community Board 10 in the area, and much more. There was also a car crash and a workplace accident that the council member says changed her life. Today's City Council segment comes as Mayor Adams is ramping up his crackdown on both crime and street homelessness. An encampment in Brooklyn under the BQE was cleared away the other day. As for what happens to people who are uprooted in those sweeps, the mayor is opening new shelters that he calls safe haven sites. The first one just opened on Morris Avenue in the Bronx. Yesterday, the mayor said this.
We're walking past people that are living on cardboard boxes in these makeshift inhumane houses. This is just not right. And I know it's not right. And I promised it and I'm going to live up to it.
But where will they go? So with all that as prelude, we welcome Councilmember Marjorie Velasquez. Councilmember, congratulations belatedly on your election and welcome to WNYC.
Good morning and thank you so much. That really means a lot.
Let's talk about some of this Mayor Adams news first, and then we'll pull back and talk about you and the district. So by way of context, were you an Adams supporter in the mayoral primary last year?
I definitely supported the mayor, especially even during the general. The party had endorsed him during the primary.
Right. But during the primary, you endorsed someone else or you stayed neutral?
No, I stayed out of it. I ended up actually doing something with the mayoral candidates, which was inviting them to the district, showcasing the different areas of the district and what help needed. And certainly certain mayoral candidates had some ideas that they wanted to fulfill. So I would go around the district and saying, well, this is what you're advocating for, and this is how it affects my district. So it's kind of like bringing it front and center to not only the candidates, but also to the rest of the city, because usually the Bronx has historically been out of borough, out of mind. And as an outer borough, we suffer significantly with under finance and funded projects. And this is a good time to have a mayor from an outer borough that understands that and really has made a point to fund and come, right? And show our communities that he is a mayor for all five boroughs.
Got it. And I get it about just wanting to kind of host all the mayoral hopefuls in your district during that primary season. And I think that safe haven site, as the mayor calls it, for people experiencing homelessness is west of your district, closer to Manhattan in the Bronx. Do I have that right?
Yeah. I think that may be Councilmember Ayala's district, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's in the Lincoln Hospital area. Can I ask, though, what you think of the whole idea of these sweeps and the direction the mayor is headed on that?
Certainly, we need to take a perspective and a good look as to why there are folks that feel more comfortable living out in the streets rather than a shelter. And it's us, right, as government officials to look into the system, the agency, and more importantly, looking into humane housing, making sure that when we're talking about those affected, the vulnerable communities, that we're looking at why are they here in the first place and what can we do, and not just give a temporary band-aid, but really holistically look at how can we make this better and how can we actually address the real issues at hand. If it's a health issue, then making sure that we are creating the housing that we're creating reflects that we're providing supportive services as well, and that we're making sure that the nonprofit providers that are in charge of that are actually delivering to the communities. So it's overall all encompassing, and that's on us, right? On the council members as well as the mayor's office. And we're going to work together. We're going to work to get it right, because, you know, no one should feel safe, safer outside than inside a facility. And that's not wrong. And I agree with the mayor. We need to make sure that we're taking care of one another.
So what do you think is the right thing to do about people who live on the streets individually or live in what the mayor would call homeless encampments, for the sake of those people as well as for the sake of others in the community? What are the things? If you think that the so-called safe haven shelters trying to improve the shelter system in terms of safety from crime in the shelters, also in terms of offering more support services, the mayor says that will be part of the safe haven shelters. I mean, can he reinvent the shelter system as a major tool here? Or if not, what do you advocate?
First of all, I'd like to not call those people, right? It's not those people, it's our people, it's our community, right? We need to make sure that we're owning New York City, and that we're making sure that we're going back and saying, these are our neighbors, this is our community, and that we have a responsibility to take care of one another. That's how I grew up, right? I'm a child of five, right? One out of five, I'm a middle child. I've got two older brothers. I got a younger brother and a younger sister, and I'm responsible for them as they are responsible for me. And that's how I grew up. And certainly that's the lens that I look at our community. And when we're taking a good stance at this, no one, once again, should feel safe sleeping out in the street. And we need to take a good look at these safe haven sites, because what these sites are, it's a different model. And it is actually providing a more direct approach to the homeless crisis, right? If it is a health issue that is out there, then we're addressing those head on, and that we're providing the support that these individuals need, my residents, my community needs, and that we're having an honest conversation, that we are working together, and we are considering this as our community, the next goal of taking care of one another.
All right. My guest is Councilwoman, Council Member Marjorie Velasquez.
Oh, yeah?
You're going to challenge? Let's see. Who? Yeah, actually, aren't you? You're in AOC's district, aren't you? Your district?
Currently, Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez. However, the district is going three ways now. It will be represented by Congressman Torres in certain pieces, Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez in other pieces, and now we get the New York 3 and whomever wins that one.
Are you an AOC-type Democrat? Do you consider yourself a Democratic Socialist? Where would you put yourself on that spectrum?
I'm a Democrat. I am not I'm not DSA-lite. I am a Democrat.
Uh-huh. And what does that mean to you in terms of core values or core mission?
My core mission, like I said before, it is making sure that my community is first and foremost, and that the values of my community stand firm, right? When we're talking about fully funding our schools, when we're talking about giving my small businesses a chance, when we're talking about the infrastructure that my community desperately needs, it's fighting for those pieces. When we're talking about representation and what we're talking mm-hmm. about elevating folks, we're making sure that everyone's at the table.
And let's talk about your background a little more, and District 13 in the East Bronx a little more. I see on your bio page your parents moved from Puerto Rico to the Bronx in the 70s. So where'd you grow up in the Bronx, and what was it like there when you were a kid?
So my parents moved a little bit around, but they settled on Parkchester in this little home, and I grew up there. I went to the local schools, 106, 127, and then for high school, like I like to say, my parents didn't trust me around boys, so they sent me to an all-girl Catholic high school, St. Catherine's Academy, which is in my district. But my brother, my older brother, who's like older by 2 years, went to Cardinal Hayes. So it's safe to say that I would visit his school often, especially for all those dances that they used to have in mixers. And from there, I went to NYU Stern. And then I moved to Thraz Neck. That's where I met my husband shortly after I moved to Thraz Neck and haven't left.
And you put on your official bio page, as I mentioned in the intro, a car crash and a workplace accident, both of which altered your life to the extent that you want to talk about them, and you don't have to. How did they change your life? And relevant to the listeners, do they inform your approach to public service in any ways?
1,000%. So one thing is that both those incidents happened within 3 months of each other. In a personal way, right, it showed me that I'm much smarter, stronger, tougher than I ever imagined, right? Because at the end of the day, the biggest hurdle or the biggest challenge or the biggest enemy, however you want to phrase it, was myself. I got in my own way. And I needed to learn how to take things a little slower, how to give myself grace, how to give myself room to grow, right? Living in a fast-paced life, I thought that I needed to recover as super fast as possible. And I needed to give myself that peace. The other world, though, what I saw firsthand, me, bilingual, college educated, access to the internet, right? So I could Google everything. I could Google to find the best doctors and the best lawyers. I got stuck in a system that did not want me to heal. And that really is what led me to fight for folks while I was in the waiting room, right? Sharing information, making sure that folks in the waiting room knew what their rights were as patients, what they can stand up for.
What did you mean when you just said a system that did not want you to heal?
There were so many challenges, right? For me, it was making the appointments, right? Making sure that the documents that I was signing were correct. Making sure that I had the insurance companies, right? So kind of the things that get in the way, it's being declined by insurances, right? The different insurance provider, that this test was not required and this treatment was not required. Meanwhile, like, it was a big challenge for me. So I'll tell you, one of my biggest hurdles was getting my hand operated, because one accident happened after the other. One insurance provider was saying, no, this is part of the prior accident. This, I'm not going to cover this, when it completely wasn't. Yeah. So you had both insurance providers literally fighting. And then you had the independent, quote unquote, medical examiner, IME, saying that what happened with my hand, it was just a bruise, when literally my thumb was not attached to my wrist for about 2.5 years, which led to a cyst growing into the wrist. It led to carpal tunnel, and it was my dominant right hand. And when we're talking about like that experience, it was my driving force to get involved, right? So after that, I decided to join the community board. I ran for district leader, and I also was Richie Torres's treasurer back in 2013. Uh-huh. So like, it was interesting because he saw something in me that I did not, right? Like, that was my lowest of lows at that time, right? I was physically just broken down, and, you know, it emotionally, it's like, you don't know your worth, right? And having that opportunity for someone so young, but so smart and brilliant, looking at you and say, I believe in you just as much as I believed in him. And we worked through it and worked it through it together. And, you know, he won. And just, those are the opportunities, right? That someone can see you as that and see you whole when you're broken down, it means a lot. And it certainly, this is what I'm fighting for, right? This is why I'm on the health committee. This is why we're talking about supporting currently the bill where we're talking about hospital transparency and medical billing transparency, right? That's one of our goals, to make sure that when we're looking at private institutions, you know, what's the billing like? Things like that, right? Where our communities are affected. We don't need our families to get into debt just to make themselves whole, just to make them heal. They should not be dealing with that on top of the fact that they're just trying to get better. You don't have to bury them in debt at the same time as they are trying to make it out of just the worst experiences in their lives ever.
With the experiences you're describing, it could leave you as a supporter of DSA-style Medicare for All health insurance, does it?
It certainly, when we're talking about healthcare coverage, everyone should have healthcare. Everyone should have the opportunity to have preventive healthcare, and it's educating folks on the on what they should have. Yes, but you know the nuance, the details on that. It's a little greater than myself at this point, but what we're talking about is making sure that the measures are there, that we're removing the red tape right now. What we can do, right? What can we do? We could remove the red tape. We could take a stance, and we can actually guide public and private institutions to fully fund our public institutions, right? We can make sure that we're actually providing resources and educating our communities as to, you know, what they are entitled to.
This is WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJP 88.5 Sussex, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJO 90.3 Toms River. We are New York and New Jersey Public Radio and live streaming at WNYC.org. A few more minutes with Marjorie Velasquez, the new city council member from District 13 in the East Bronx. It's week 13 in our year-long series, 51 council members in 52 weeks, as we are interviewing every member of the New York City Council this year, in this year in which a majority of city council is new because of term limits, and it's majority female for the first time. 212-433-WNYC, if anyone wants to get in, 212-433-9692. Councilmember, tell us about the people in the district in the East Bronx. How would you describe your constituents demographically or any other way?
I'd love to describe them as the strongest, toughest group of folks ever during the pandemic, seeing how my community takes care of one another. And it was just a beautiful thing to see different communities team up, right? In City Island, one of the groups called themselves City Island Strong. And they went making sure that, you know, families had PPE, that we would give out food together. And it was just different organizations all teaming up to say, we're stronger together. And that exemplifies my community. That exemplifies the district.
What's the number one reason that constituents have contacted your office since you started in January?
So, two things. One has been housing, and the other, especially with the shooting in Jacoby, has been public safety.
And what's your relationship to Mayor Adams' approach to public safety? We know it's been controversial in various ways.
My approach is public safety is everything that involves the community. It comes into making sure that our streets are well lit, that our storefronts are filled, and that community is made whole again. Oftentimes, once again, out of borough, out of mind, and the proper funding of our communities is essential, and making sure that when we're talking about our district, that we're making sure that our community knows that they're safe because everyone's in it together. We work with our police precincts. We work with our fire department. We work with our local hospitals. It's a teamwork. It's team effort. And we, as a collective, we are all in this together. And it's making sure that all of us, right, all my different departments, all my precincts are properly funded.
So neighborhood safety teams, so-called, are they... are any of them in your district, and do you support that kind of deployment, which has been controversial?
I have NCOs. So my precincts in my district are the 45th and the 49th precincts. So what we have is NCO, which is the neighborhood cop model. I support having additional officers. I often feel that the neighborhood, the NCOs that we have, are too little. So I've been advocating to have more NCOs in both precincts.
And what else would you say is a number one issue for you that we haven't touched on?
Having a women's health birthing center in the Bronx. Right now, other boroughs have two women health centers. And right now, the Bronx has zero. And where we're talking about inequity and making sure that we have the right resources for our communities, that's number one, especially with the high rates of maternal morbidity and the different resources we need.
Do you think that having a majority female city council for the first time ever will result in policy differences than what might have come in the past with majority men?
Not only that, but it's also the lens that we come from, right? We come from different worlds. And so many, it's the most diverse city council that has come in. And so we come in from different lived experiences, different professions. So yeah, you're going to see a lot of changes, not only in policy, but what our funding looks like.
And we are inviting every city council member, as some of our listeners know, in this series to bring something for show and tell from your district and go back to your days in elementary school in Parkchester. And I don't know if you did show and tell in those days, but obviously you can't bring the physical thing to the radio. But what did you bring us for virtual show and tell from the 13th City Council District?
We're talking about the best of the best, the largest park in all of New York City. It's Pelham Bay Park. Most Bronxites know that's the place for most families, right? You connect to Orchard Beach, you connect to different experiences where you can literally go hiking to a trail and make it up to Westchester County. You can, you know, go to the beach, you can ride horses. The opportunities are there, and it's a beautiful experience for most Bronxites. And ironically enough, right now, I'm actually been doing a tour from Bartow Pell Mansion. So it is it gives us the opportunity to continue to advocate for the 1% funding for parks, because for me, it's essential to make sure that Pelham Bay Park is enjoyed by all of New York City as well.
That is really cool. And I have done it myself. I have taken the bus, the BX12, to the beach. You could take the bus to the beach in your district at Orchard Beach, right?
Yes, and I'm trying to have it more than just seasonal. So that's part of the outlook, right? We want to make sure that when we're looking at our green spaces, understand that there's so much more potential than what we're giving it. So that's why having a chair like Shaker Krishnan for parks is important, because he gets it. He gets the green space is for all.
All right, you ready? You ready to end with a little lightning round? Here we go.
All right, I'm ready if you are.
What's your favorite thing about living in New York City?
Favorite thing, it's the ability to see so many people from so many different backgrounds, hear the different languages, and definitely eat all the amazing different foods.
What's your least favorite thing about living in New York?
How sometimes we're so fast that we forget to stop and take a moment for ourselves to enjoy what's happening.
Do you own a pet?
I have 3 rescue cats.
Oh.
Yeah.
What's one food from your... Well, what'd you name those rescue kitty cats?
Oh, okay, sure. Mio, Mercutio, and Savannah Grace. Yes, she has 2 names, because in my mind, she's a Southern Belle, and I love her so much.
And what's one food from your family tradition or anything else that other people might like to try that they could find in your district?
Oh, wow. There's so much, but one of the things that I'd like to say is flan, and from Havana Cafe on East Tremont.
Do you have a favorite musical artist these days?
Oh, heck yeah. Bad Bunny.
And what's one recent book or movie you'd recommend to the listeners to read or see? Last question.
Oh, man. So I haven't watched movies in a while. I'm binge watching a whole bunch of shows. Handmaid's Tale, I just finished watching the fourth season. That was excellent.
And there we leave it in our 51 Council Members in 52-Week Series for today with a brand-new council member from District 13 in the East Bronx, Marjorie Velasquez, from the neighborhoods of, all right, tell me if I miss anything, Allerton, City Island, Country Club, Edgewater Park, Ferryport Point, Locust Point, Morris Park, Pelham Bay, Pelham Gardens, Pelham Parkway, Schuylerville, Silver Beach, Spencer Estates, Throgsneck, Van Ness, Waterbury LaSalle, Westchester Square, and Zarega.
You got them all.
It's amazing how many little neighborhoods our city is chopped up into, right?
Oh, yeah, no, and we're the largest district in the borough, so it's definitely amazing.
Council member, a pleasure. We hope to have you on many times during your term.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.